going, y'all. My name is Roger, and I'm an alcoholic. I love Georgia. I do. I've never went through Georgia and go, I hate this state. I love it, man. Y'all are something else. And y'all clean up good. I seen y'all when y'all wasn't cleaned up. Y'all put some spice in your hair tonight. Well, I got on what my wife told me to wear. For any single women, don't even think about it, I'm married. Ever since I got teeth, man, girls always go, hey. Before teeth, they wouldn't go, hey. You know what I mean? And John, this is the best guy. I'm telling you, John is the best taper I've ever met in my life. This guy is great. I just love him, man. He looks like my brother, don't he? From the side. Love you, John. Well, I know what y'all asked me to come here, and I know what to do. But I'd like to tell you some things about me before I get started. I have a home group. It's called the Monday Night Speakers Group in St. Petersburg, Florida, and we meet on Monday night. It ain't funny. I'm originally from Kentucky, and I used to belong to a Tuesday night group that met on Saturday morning. Really? And, man, they sent two knuckleheads and picked me up at the airport. Oh, it was great. The Post Brothers. Oh, my God. I swear. It was nice. No, they're good people. They are. I had a lot of fun with them. And Terry, don't ever ride with Terry and say turn here because he'll do it. And we turned. We got over. And good to see you, Terry. As always, man. But I like y'all because y'all the kind of people that come up and say, you got a booger in your nose. I mean, I like that. Really, I mean, I don't want to get up here and y'all be going, yoo-hoo. But I'm glad to be here. I always wanted to come here to Cartersville because I remember Mama used to always have them Carter pills. And every time we'd come through Carter, you know, on the expressway, go by here, I'm taking them Carter pills. So y'all were thought of. Way before, under each chair should be a hymn book. We're going to start out down by the river tonight. I do it at my home group, and they go, hey. But my sobriety date is November the 12th, 1990. I'm a member of the Monday Night Speakers Group. I have a sponsor named Ron, and Ron has a sponsor named Bob, and Bob has a sponsor named Tom, and we can go all night, man. And I wasn't happy when I came to AA. I feel happiness tonight. I feel joy. I feel the love. Just like it says, share the love. Man, y'all been sharing it. I've had people say I look good. Now that's love right there. But I know I ain't a good looking man. Well, then I got teeth, I am. But before, I came to AA, this is terrible. This is embarrassing. My wife hates it when I tell this. I come to AA, my teeth had fell out. I didn't get knocked out, didn't get beat up or nothing like that. And when you start losing teeth, especially in the front, you can't control your tongue. And I'd walk around the AA meetings, and girls would walk by and snicker. And I'd go over to my sponsor. I said, hey, them girls think I'm funny. He'd say, Rod, them girls think you're a lizard. And all drunks think they look good. Y'all know it. Y'all seen drunks come in here, the ear tore off, and hair, half the hair is gone, but he's got one good side. Hey. We get them in our group. We get them rough ones. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it, man. You know why? Because we got a mixture of idiots. Seriously. I know you don't think you're an idiot. But we do. By God, we do. We're just a mixture, man. I just love it. We got something for everybody. You know, if you just got a divorce, sit over in the divorce section. If she came back from the divorce, sit in the front row. It's going to get worse. We got something for everybody, man. I just love it. I'm married. My wife would have come with me, but we've got football going on. Yeah, I got kids, and then I got girls who are cheerleaders. They're a lot of fun. Oh, Daddy, I got to go get my hair done. Shut up. They're a treat. All my life, I swear, as long as I can remember, I always wanted to live with chicks. Be careful what you pray for. Because I got chicks at home. And I'm telling you, man, I don't know how y'all get that hair in that sink. I think y'all work hard. I think y'all take that comb and then rake it and let it drain down the drainer. Because I have to unclog it. And I'd stick one in. I got this tool. It's got these little knobs on it. And you can stick it down in there. And I got as far as it'd go. And then I tried to pull it out and I couldn't get it out. And then I pulled real hard. Oh, and looked like a squirrel on it. Swear to God. What do y'all do, man? Good God. And man, that sink will just flush real good once you get the hair out. But I love my girls. I do. I love them. I got one boy, and he's the prize. I don't tell them that. And I know they won't listen to no AACD, so I can say it on. But I'm very blessed. I'm telling you, I am blessed, man. I just had a grandbaby. I didn't. I'd be walking funny, wouldn't I? I just had a grandbaby. I'm not making fun of y'all. I swear, women are something else, man. Y'all can, I've been in there four times and seen babies delivered. Y'all are tough. Y'all got us. Oh, we can't do nothing. We scratch our, get a little burn on our hand. I got to go to hospital. But y'all, man. I'm telling you, I will never say nothing bad about women other than that hair. That's the only thing I can find wrong with y'all. But I've been in, and I'm the weakest joker to have when a baby's delivered. They pulled the baby out and they said, Roger, you want to cut the cord? Oh man, how can you cut that cord? Ow. So I have three, and my oldest daughter just had a little boy. Oh man, she named him Jax, J-A-X, and he's fat. He's got rings, you know, every little, he's got a ring here. Oh, man. Looks just like me. Hey. I just love it, man. It's funny how babies come in and just immediately we fall in love with them. Because I believe when you look in them eyes, and now I know everybody in this room's heard this, we can see God. Man, I feel it. I felt the presence of God here this weekend. I did. I feel it tonight. But I know what I'm here to do. Tell in a general way what I used to be, what I was used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like tonight. Man, I'm telling you, y'all wouldn't have took me in when I first got here. That's a mess, man. And I've been to penitentiary twice. I'm not bragging. That's not bragging. And I've been to penitentiary for drinking. Drinking. Everybody else is killing people. Stabbing people. Beating them the heck out of them. What are you here for? Drinking. That's embarrassing, man. Especially walking back to the shower with your towel on your shoulder. What are you here for? Nothing. It's embarrassing. And I want to tell you before I forget it, I'm a postal worker for the United States government. You want to know why your mail's messed up? Here it is. We found the problem. I say that for guys and girls who are in here who have got out of penitentiary, who have got out of jail, and said, I can't go over and apply. I don't know how many times I've heard it. I said, won't you go apply at the post office? Oh, they won't hire me. Oh, you've already been. They go, no, man, I ain't been. I've been arrested. I said, I am too. I'm working for them. I got a government badge. He said, how'd you get on? I said, I went over and sold myself. Went over and told the truth. The lady, this big, large lady, said, have you ever been arrested? I went, well, yeah. She said, have you ever been convicted of a felony? I went, you know it, baby. Woo! Have I ever? Woo! I was a good one, too. And she said, you are different. She said, I'm going to have you fill out the application. And the application goes to the FBI. They do an FBI search. She said, but don't lie. I did not lie. Now, every question it asked me, I put, hell yeah, I did. Matter of fact, twice. I did. And they hired me. Because I didn't lie. If you're here tonight, man, you're worried about that company, go over and tell them the truth. Y'all looking for an idiot? You got one. I've got that out of the way. I come from a small town in Kentucky. A little town called Elkton in Todd County. Nothing but poor people. Ain't no rich people. You go through Todd County, oh my God. Drop off a dollar as you go. Send it out the window. Watch them come after it like flies. Very poor people. My dad was probably the best dad that ever lived. My dad, I love to talk about my dad. He was a great big man, big broad shoulders. And he seemed like a tree. You know, when you're little, remember how big your daddy looked? My daddy looked big, man. Big old shoulders. Big old head. I know where I get it now. And my mother would buy them shirts that had all the X's. And he put that shirt on. He couldn't button it around his neck. But he'd button it right here. He'd button it right there. And then he couldn't button it no more. Because he had a big belly. My daddy had a big old belly. His belly got there before he did. honest. And everybody loved him, man. Everybody likes big people. I don't know what it is about big people. You ever notice? Oh, hey, they come up to him. But everybody loved my daddy, and they called him Butterball. And Butterball would walk around all across. He'd go up the square and walk around, and he always had his finger in his belly button because you could always see it. And Daddy would walk around, anybody would walk by, they'd stop and say, "Hey, Butterball," he'd say, "How y'all doing?" And they'd shake his hand, all those kids would go, "Ooh." But they loved him, you know what I mean? There was something about him. And my dad always liked to take me and my brother with him. I've always been short and heavy, and my brother was short and heavy. And he loved to take us. I felt like a wrestling team, you know. My brother would go, "Tag me in." And this old town, we didn't live in the town. We lived on the outskirts of it, on Stringtown Road. Just the old road went back, and nothing, old shacks back there. And my dad would work the farm for rich people. Somebody had a, you know, big farm. They get my dad to raise the crop. And my dad was good. My dad was a rough man. I mean, you go up and shake his hand, you'll get a splinter. He was a rough man. And he could do everything. You ever had a dad that could do everything? I heard some guy say, "Hey, Butterball, if you need winders, let me know. I'll put them in for you." He said, "I can get them." He could do anything, electric work, plumbing, and he loved my mother. That's one thing I always seen. My daddy loved my mama. I mean, loved her, man. He cared everything about her. And I learned that from him. He loved my mama. Oh, man. And my mother would tell him something. Only thing we had going on in Elkton, everything was closed as soon as the lights went off. You know, when it got dark, everything on the square was closed. Only thing open was the funeral home. And my dad loved to go to funeral homes. He didn't care who was laid out, he's going. And he grabbed me and my brother. And my mother would say, "Make sure they're clean." And he'd go over to where she just done the dishes and take the dish rag and rub our head and face with it. I swear he would. And he'd go, "They're clean." And we'd get in that old pickup truck, and man, he'd get in a hurry to go there. I swear he'd do almost 40 miles an hour on the big road. That means he was rolling. Cars just going past us like crazy. We're doing 40, and he's like, "Yeah." He thought he was really tearing that truck up. We get to that old funeral home. He pulls in that old gravel parking lot, goes around back, and parks. And I reach for the vice grip to open that door. And right when I reach for him, my dad, who's a disciplinarian, if y'all know what that means, my dad, he went, "Hey, wait a minute." And both me and my brother turned. We knew. Listen. He said, "Do not eat nothing." We said, "Okay, Daddy." He went on up in these old funeral homes. Y'all have probably been to them. Where you walk in the back of the funeral home, they got a kitchen. And they'd have food on the counter. Like navy beans. Butter beans, pinto beans. If I die tonight, please don't bring beans. I think that's the terriblest thing you bring to a funeral home. Here's a family sitting up there by the casket crying, and all of them going, "Oop." Bring cookies. And we're looking at all My dad had already went inside the parlor and he's standing up there by a casket by somebody he don't know. And he's got that finger in his belly button. And every time somebody walks by, he takes a hand, thank y'all for coming. Me and my brother went around to every car in that lot and started stealing bow caps. Y'all know what bow caps are? On the bow stem? I don't own nothing with air. I have a bicycle. It don't have a tube or a rubber on it. And I'm, of course, stealing bow caps. What the heck for? And man, we go inside, forget everything he told us. Get inside, there's all them beans. I seen them. I seen the navy beans, the butter beans, the green beans. Then I seen a package of cookies called 66. Piggly Wiggly used to make them. I live in the country. You see a cookie, man, you're proud. Had cream on the inside. Shut up. Me and my brother bush hogged them cookies. Started to eat them cookies. We got cookie dust in the corners of our mouth, all over our bibs. And I said, told my brother, I said, you know why they call them 66? And he, my brother's older than I am. He said, no, dummy, tell me. I said, they got six in a row, six across, 11 in each row. He looked at me. It took about a half hour. He goes, you're a genius. There's 66 of them in there. He thought I was a genius. And we walked around, went out in the parlor, and there's my dad up there greeting people. And he's seen us. Now, my dad seen us. He didn't make a big thing about it. He just waited till we got closer to him. And when we got up to him, he started whooping us. Now, if you're new, I know this hurts your ears. Whooping meant you got a whooping. It didn't mean you was going to get one. He delivered. Right there in front of that casket. And you could hear everybody in the funeral home going, look at those heathens. And right about that time, a man walked up to my dad with chalky hair and a suit on and had shiny cards out of his coat. My pocket won't open. He had a pocket that would open. And he had shiny cards in, and he said, are you Butterball? My dad said, I am Butterball. He said, you're the guy I'm looking for. He said, you're looking for me, you found it. And the guy said, I want you to come to Louisville and work for us. Work out of the union hall, getting other truck drivers come over. My dad said, you want me to do what? What's it pay? He said, $5 an hour. Say it again. My dad had never been paid by the hour. That guy said, $5 an hour. He said, what I got to do? He said, I'll tell you later. You come to Louisville. And I know y'all seen the Kentucky Derby on TV. It's not pronounced Louisville. And it's not called Louisville. It's pronounced Louisville. I'm telling you, don't go to that town and pull in there and ask somebody, hey, listen, is this Louisville? Because they'll go, no, it's around in the alley. Just a little warning, things you need to know. And my dad, he was so excited. I've never seen my dad this excited. He run out of that funeral home, jumped in the truck, waited for us to get in the truck, and took off down the road going home. And all the time he's going, I'm going to tell your mama. And when he got in front of that old house, he jumped out of the truck like a teenager. I mean, just run in the house. And run in the house and grab my mother. My mother is a large woman. Grab my mama. Picked her up like this, kissed her right in the mouth, and her feet never left the ground. And set her back down. Love my mama. He backed that old truck up against the porch. It had, y'all know what cattle racks are on the truck? Some of you do. He opened up the gate and pushed a couch, the only piece of furniture we own, pushed it up on the back of that couch and started putting sacks of underwears and T-shirts in Piggly Wiggly bags. Tuck in bags and pushed them underneath that couch. I have three sisters who are as large as my mama. And I guarantee you, if they were here tonight, you'd have to turn the air up. So them girls could take some air. And they've been to, they've been in here when I've talked, not here. They've been to where when I've talked before, and they go, that's right. My dad started loading my three sisters up in that truck like cattle. I ain't lying. He'd get behind them, push them up in there, and they took the whole couch. Put no room for me and my brother. Daddy said, sit on one arm, Roger, and Ralph, you sit on the other arm. And we took off, headed for Louisville. Started going, this was before 65 or any of them roads were built, went up Dixie Highway. Y'all know Dixie Highway? Got on Dixie Highway, man, we ride for 3 or 4 hours, ain't got nowhere. Because, you know, you got lights and everything. Just barely got to the Mammoth Cave and all that. And my brother is freaking out. Man, he's shaking his legs like this. I said, Ralph, what's wrong? He said, I got to pee. I said, tell Daddy. He went, hell no. He's scared of my daddy. And there's always an idiot in the family. So I knock on the window. I said, hey, Daddy. He turned around and went, what? I said, we got to pee. Now, he didn't look for a nice rest area. He didn't look for a nice blacktop parking lot. Pulled right off in the bushes. Right in the gully. And my mother took my three sisters. I'm going somewhere with this. I'm going to make a point. My mother took my three sisters up in the woods to do their business. My daddy, my love daddy, my blood daddy, made me and my brother march to that tailgate, stand on the edge of that tailgate, and pee off the back of that truck. And I believe that's what made me drink. That's right. Go on, think about it. You drank too. Well, we went on to Louisville, got into Louisville, and you go up Dixie Highway all the way. Louisville sits next to Ohio River. We got to where we couldn't go no further. If he would have took a right, I would have been brought up in the predominant East End. But he took a left. Went down in one of the roughest neighborhoods I've ever seen in my life. Catholic churches on every corner. Oh, man, awful. But I like Catholics. I do. It's the only church I know. They don't read the Bible. They read the program. I want to go there. Don't get mad at me. I see it brewing already. And we went up and down every street looking for something to rent. And my dad found an old shotgun house. Y'all know what shotgun houses are? Found an old shotgun house that had old white cardboard sign on it. It had the word for and the word rent. For and the word rent. Nothing else. Stopped that truck, got out of that truck, walked over, grabbed that cardboard, and started studying it. I love my daddy. About that time, somebody come out from the next door to that house, and it was a fairly younger guy. He's about 60. He said, "Hey, buddy, you want to rent that house?" And my dad said, "I do. I'm interested. Can I look at it?" The guy opened the door. They walked through it. My dad said, "I'll do it." Back in them days, you didn't have to fill out a rest report or a financial report. Back in them days, they just grab a key and hand it to you. And the guy said, "Have my money in 30 days. And my dad said, "I'll have your money." And he backed that old truck up against him, that old porch, pushed that couch off, pushed it in the front room by the big, they had a big plate glass window. He put the couch right in front of it, backwards, where we could all sit. And he said, "I'm going down to Booty Probus's used furniture at 15th and Market. I'm thinking he's going to come back with some brand new furniture." My dad come back 45 minutes later with a truckload of junk. 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 I keep thinking y'all over there going, "What'd he say? What'd he say? What'd he say?" He pushed off 5 rollway beds. Y'all know what rollway beds are? Pushed 5 rollway beds off, unhooked them, and laid them down in the bedroom. Because the shotgun house had the front room, bedroom, and kitchen. That's it. Then he brought in a table. Had chrome on the edges. And he rolled it through the house like a wheel. And got in the kitchen and set it up. Went back out to the truck. Brought in 5 chairs that didn't match. You know what I'm talking about? 3 of them had a high back. One of them had a heart-shaped back. One of them didn't even have a back. And he set it around the table, and me and my brother, we're just like this. Watching him set all this up. Then he went out and brought in a big floor model TV, John, and set it down on the floor. Went back out to the truck again, brought in another TV, and set it on top of that TV. And I'm thinking, man, we are living. I just love it. So then he goes to work. Comes back at night. He's got a pocket full of cash hanging outside. And he's got 2 big old grocery sacks with A&P on them. Y'all remember A&P? Come in the house. We come in the front door. And he goes through the house. We follow him like hungry wolves. Get back there in the kitchen, pulled out a long stalk of bologna, lays it on the table. Pulled out a big box of crackers, those big crackers. Remember when all 4 of them were stuck together? Opened them up, laid them on the... Look, he's doing all this like a science experiment. And then he reached in his pocket, pulled out his pocket knife, opened it up, and then dried it off. And started to cut the bologna. Started cutting that bologna, and he looked down at me and Ralph said, "How thick y'all want it?" I said, "I want it thick." About like that, Daddy. He cut that bologna thick. He'd lay it on top of that crackers and take that same pocket knife and waller it through the mustard and make a happy face. Yeah. And I'd grab the other cracker, put it on top of it, take a bite up, and that buster would shoot through them holes. I'd turn that cracker sideways, lick it off. I'm telling you, that was the most exciting part of my life. We were living, and we went in the front room, laid on the floor, and watched those two TVs. Y'all know what I'm talking about. One of them's got the picture, and the other one's got the sound. Yeah. Yeah. You can always tell who had them, the ones that lasted. And I swear to God, I thought we were rolling, man. We started going to school, me and my brother, and my dad had took us to the barber college. You know, when you don't have, when you're poor, you have to go to barber college. That's how they learn to cut hair on poor people. And my dad walked into barber college, and there's a real hateful man running the place. Y'all seen them. They're everywhere. He goes, "How many you got?" My dad said, "I got two." And that old man looked at me and my brother. He goes, "Sit down." I sat down in the chair, and he grabbed my hair in the front like he pulled it back. I said, "I just want a little off." He pulled it back. He only had one cut, and it was called off. We laughed there. Looked like two little pit bulls. It ain't funny. When you're heavy and you ain't got no hair, that makes it even worse. Well, we start going to school, and Daddy buys us polished cotton pants and polished cotton shirts, and we look like two little heavy maintenance men. We're walking down the hall of the school, and there's some guys down there that's got grease in their hair. Remember when you called them greasers? They had their, and they had on tight t-shirts, they rolled cigarettes up in their arm, and had on tight Levi's. And they were skinny. I don't like skinny people. I've gotten a lot better, thank God for the steps. I can tolerate, I really can. I didn't like them because I've never been skinny. And then Levi didn't make Huskies back then. So I don't like these guys. And we're walking down the hall to school. They're all leaning against the wall, combing their hair back like this. And we walk by and one of them hollers out, "Hey, we got a light out." My brother went over and bust that guy right in the, I mean, right in the face, Jerry. Knocked snot out of him. Now, I'm going somewhere. There's a reason I'm telling this story. The very next day, in the big book, Dr. Silkworth would tell Bill Wilson, we have to go back through our lives. Nothing counts but honesty and thoroughness. I said, "Dr. Silkworth, am I preaching to the choir?" All right, I just want to make sure everybody knows what I did this one night, and they're all going, "Huh? Who's Silkworth?" I said, "He lives down there on Main Street." Dr. Silkworth said, we go back through our life, nothing counts but honesty and thoroughness. The very next day, in that same hall, same polished cotton pants, same polished cotton shirts, I'm about to have a personality change. Have you ever read that? I'm about to have one. Didn't even know it. Went down the same hall, same greasers, combing their hair back. My brother's walking in front of me. He's about a person ahead of me. And as we're walking through there, them greasers don't say a word. They're scared to death of my brother. But as I go walking by, I'm going like this. I have had a personality change right then. Didn't even know it. Every time I've done inventories, I go right back to this. Because this helps me a lot. Later on that day, I run into a guy named Charlie. I have never drank alcohol up to this time. Charlie's a little short, round dude with no neck. You've seen them. People so heavy that their neck fall. You know, and they called him No Neck. Hey, No Neck. I didn't. I called him Charlie. Because I like heavy people. Them skinny ones I don't like. So Charlie said, "Hey, Rise, do you drink?" I go, "Hell yeah, I drink. I drink, man. I drink good, too." Never had alcohol in my mouth. Never. I know today why I said that. I didn't know it then. I want to fit in. Yeah, I know, man, I know. That's what happened. And that Friday night, Charlie said, "Be out in front of the football game. I'll have a bottle." He said, "You drank?" No, I said, "Too, I drank." Man, you'll have to stop me. Never had a drink before in my life. We get at the football game. Charlie had got a bottle, and the bag is just twisted around it. He untwisted it. Pulled out this big bottle of Orange Rock vodka. Everybody's drank Orange Rock vodka. One of you had. One of you. Damn. Yeah, it was Orange Rock. Charlie took that old tin top off. It had a tin top off. I just threw it away. And he leaned back like this. And took a big pull. And he pulled it out real quick and started slapping himself in the face. He'd say, "Come on, Raj, hit me in the face like he's doing in movies." And I thought, "Hand me that bottle." I grabbed the bottle from Charlie. I leaned back and I got ready to take a pull. And every time you put alcohol in me, every time, if I drank the night, the same thing will happen. You put alcohol in me, and my jaws stick out. And I hand the bottle back to Charlie. Charlie grabbed the bottle. He leans back. He takes another big pull off of it. This time he pulled it out real fast. He's bobbing and weaving. "Come on, Rod. Hit me the jaw like they do in that movie." And I'm trying to grab that bottle. I get the bottle from him. I lean back. I take a big pull off of it. This time my hands start tightening. I thought, "Yeah, say something about that jaw now, buddy." I had to haul back to Charlie. He grabbed it and he puts it up. And I'm standing over here going, "I wish you would. I wish you would." He leaves back. He takes another big pull. And he goes, "Hey, Rise." I went, bam. Hit him right in the face. And he sat down on the curb and started crying. Started calling me all them Cartersville names. Don't act like y'all don't know him. And I got a buzz. Remember Buzz? Yeah, that's why you're here. I got a buzz, man. My ears got real warm. My neck got real hot. And I got real sexy. Everybody in there's done it. Don't act like you ain't. You think I'm lying right by a beer joint tonight or one of these nightclubs. Look in the parking lot. You'll see one of them. That was the first time I ever got a buzz. And we walked around the football field had a fence around it. And everybody would lean on the fence. The cool people would lean on the fence. We'd lean on the fence. And girls would walk behind us. And they would say stuff to me like, "I want you. Kiss me tonight." Charlie said, them girls didn't say a word. I said, maybe not to you, by God, I heard it. Later on, after I come to AA, he said, that was your perception. I said, spell it. Yeah. Anytime these AAs throw a big word on you, say, spell it. He said, that was your perception. You hear what you want to hear. You see what you want to see. I kind of don't believe that because I really thought I heard it. And I just started from there, chasing that same buzz. Same buzz I got that night, I started running for it. Somebody'd say, Rod, you want a drink? Yeah, man. I just running and ripping and running, ripping and running. Come home drunk. My dad said, where you been? Who asked? He said, I'm asking. He said, what the hell happened to you, boy? He said, you're getting up early tomorrow. You get up when I get up. So I start getting up when he'd get up, and I'd be hateful. So hateful. Y'all done it. Go to work with him. He'd say, get that wrench. Get it yourself. And then he'd throw something at me. I'd go get it. My dad didn't play, man. And he told me, he said, if you don't stop what you're doing, I'm going to send you back down the country to live with my brother. I said, Daddy, your brother's a drunk. He said, that's where I'm going to send you. He said, come in drunk one more time. And I'm putting you on the Greyhound bus. Y'all know what happened. Just couldn't help it, man. I got drunk again. Come in, he said, you'll leave Saturday morning. Put me on the Greyhound, sent me down, back down the country. Got down the country, got off that old bus. I asked my uncle's truck, his old pickup truck, but I don't see him. The heck yes. So I walk over to the truck. I get on the passenger side, I open up the door, and he's laying in the floorboard. I get him up, set him up. He said, can you drive? I went, yeah. I start driving. He starts drinking. I'd drive a little. He drank a little. About an hour went by. I said, hey, Uncle Boone, I drank too. I didn't know that. He started giving me, I started drinking. Oh, it was a nasty old bottle. Oh, God. Started drinking out of it. And man, now I started getting a buzz quick. I went off the road, come back on. Y'all done it. You've done it. Knocking reflectors over. Here comes a state trooper behind me. We're riding in the gully. State trooper got right behind me, got in the gully. And I stopped. He walks up to the truck. I got the windows up. He goes, get out of that truck. I go, I can't. You get in. He scooted me over. And he drove me and my uncle to jail. In our truck. My uncle knew the routine. He went right to sleep. I started going, I want to see my lawyer. And then that state trooper would say, what's his name? I said, you know it. He said, if you don't keep your mouth shut, I'm going to send you right down the road to Western State Hospital. Wasn't long after that I was down at Western State. I couldn't keep my mouth shut. He said, come out. Come out. Help me down to Western State Hospital. Get down to Western State, and they got these long steps. About 300 of them. You got to walk up. And this guy's got to help me the whole way. Get up to the door. Here comes another hateful guy. He's got a clipboard. He goes, what's your name? I said, Roger Hightower. Where the hell are you from? I said, right down the road here. He said, well, go outside. It had an old rock wall around it. You ever seen these places? Made out of rock, and it's real high. And there's sick people in there. No drunks. Wasn't a drunk in there. It's all really bad people. I ain't making fun of them either, y'all. They're born that way. Man, I went out that yard. I'm walking around. People, when they walk across the yard, look like they were riding a bicycle, but they wasn't. I mean, they were... But there was one guy sitting by this rock wall in a chair, and he'd had his ear up to the door. I mean, up to the wall. And it was bothering me. It bothered you, John. You know how we are. We look at him and go, I ain't going to ask him. I'm asking him. I went over, I said, hey, man, what are you doing? He jumped up. He said, sit down. I sat down. He said, put your ear up against the wall. I put my ear against the wall. About 2 minutes went by. I said, man, I don't hear nothing. He said, it's been like it all day. I looked at that speaker. I said, please call me. Please. Finally, they called my name and I went inside. I stayed there 90 days eating oatmeal. I thought, that's the only food y'all got is oatmeal. Well, I didn't change nothing. And Alcoholics Anonymous is about change. If you don't change, your sobriety date will. And I didn't change nothing. I'll never forget, there was a guy in there who was one of them guys. You know, that helped the people, you know, Orley or something. He said, Roger, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. What? He said, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. And he was right. I didn't change nothing. I got out and I kept getting locked up. And finally, I went back to Lowell. Got up there and told Daddy I've changed. And Jerry, I hadn't changed. Doing the same old stuff. Just kept getting locked up. And I'd go in front of this judge. This judge said, what's your name? I said, Roger. He said, Roger, you were supposed to have been here on October the 16th. Where was you at? I said, I was helping the crippled children down there. And he bought it. He said, well, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you're helping out. He said, I'm going to tell you something. You come before me again, and I'm going to help you. He looked at me real serious. I hate when people look at me serious. I hate it, man. He said, I'm going to help you. I said, yes, sir. I said, you better take a picture of me because I ain't coming back. And I left there and I got locked up Thursday. That was on a Monday. Went back in front of him. He said, Roger, it's your lucky day. He said, I'm going to give you 5 years in penitentiary. I said, Your Honor, I got something to do. He said, I know, and you're getting ready to do it. Put me in the penitentiary. And it was perfect. I know it sounds crazy, but it was perfect. I got the penitentiary. He put me in a cell with a young black kid named Hambone. This kid is my messenger. I thought if God sent me a messenger, at least send me a white one named Eric or Michael. Oh, hell no. I get Hambone. I'm standing at the cell. They open up the cell. They unchain you. I walk in the cell, and this young kid from Eastern Kentucky, I'm from Western Kentucky. He's black. I'm white. Ain't nothing going right. And Hambo held up both his hands. He goes, God loves you. I went, wrong cell. And it was the right cell, right on time, because God ain't never late. God ain't never late. He's always been on time. Some people in this room should have been dead. Especially women. You women rode on them cars on the hood with your tops off on, I want a party! And fell off that car and didn't get killed. Don't act like y'all didn't. If it wasn't that, it was something about like that. And man, I hated it. I don't want to pray with him. But this kid, I'm telling you, right on time. Right on time. Very next day, he'd get up out of his bunk. He'd get on his knees. And I'd get up out of my bunk and I'd stand beside him. He's on his knees. You don't get on your knees in front of another man. Not in penitentiary. And he'd hold his hand up. He would. He'd hold his arm up. He'd say, Roger, won't you pray with me? And I'm ignorant. I don't know any better. I cuss him out. Won't you go to hell? Didn't even flinch him. These people will not flinch. You can't hurt them. They got shock absorbers. Every day he'd ask me to pray. I'd go out on the highway, pick up trash, come in at the end of the day. They'd unhook you in front of that cell and that kid's on his knees. And I'd see him on his knees. I'd go, oh, shit. God. And he'd ask me to pray with him. For the next 8 months, Jerry, he asked me to pray with him. He never missed a beat. Never missed a beat. I'm telling you. When these people get on you, surrender. Just surrender. Just go right up front and say, when they say, will you pray with me? Hell yeah, I'll pray with you. Let's get this over with, right? I wouldn't do it. Been down there almost 8 months. And on the eighth month, exactly 8 months that I've been there, I'm out on the highway picking up trash, and I picked up one of these church tracks. You ever seen them? You know what a church track is. You open them up and they have a subliminal message. It showed a cross and showed two people, two stick men running on them sideboards. And when they get to the middle, the cross would light up. And I looked at it, I go, that's it. That's it. I've been living in the dark. I get it, man. I get it. Now, I'm talking to myself. Ain't nobody around. If guys on the other side were going, what in the hell is he doing? I go, I get it. I said, when we go back tonight, I dare that kid ask me to pray. I dare him. Oh, I'll pray with him. Oh, man, I can't wait. And I'm riding on the bus. Everybody's chained to the bus. Nobody's talking but me. I'm going to pray with him. So at night, they unhook us. I walk in, and he does the same routine. He holds his arm up, and I push his arm back. He said, Rod, are you going to pray with me? I said, hell yeah, I am. And I knelt down beside him and he went off. These people go off. He started huffing and spitting and popping. Oh my God, man. And the guards come walking through the hallway and they get to our cell. Right when they get to our cell, I jump up. I can't let them see me. I can't let these two white guards see me on the floor praying with a black kid from Eastern Kentucky. And when I got up, this kid got real loud. He said, Roger, God don't care who's watching. He'd say, Roger, God don't care who's listening. And I'm thinking to myself, I want to bring it down a little. I didn't do it. I was thinking, man, bring it down. He said, God is the perfect gentleman. He's ready when you're ready. And I was ready. I was ready. I've had it. I've had enough of me. How long can you sit in that seat and just be full of your selfishness, self-centered self, keep wanting to do it your way? I couldn't do it no more. I got back down on my knees. And I said, God, I don't care what you want me to do. I'm ready, man. I don't care if you, I don't want no chick. I don't want no job. I just want you. That's it. And something happened inside of me, inside my heart. The big book says, unless we have a psychic change, there's little hope of your recovery. Little hope. And I've got to change of heart. And I got a change of mind. I'm ready. I'm cocked like a gun now. I'm ready, man. And I got out of penitentiary. I got sent to a halfway house. This halfway house, you can only stay 90 days. I stayed 2 years. 2 years. I loved it there. I was with guys who wanted to be helped. I was with guys, man, that wanted to go through the big book and get that clear direction. A clear-cut direction we got in the big book that nobody knows about. That new guys come and they're starving, man, saying, feed me. Feed me, man. And I got it, man. I'm starting to get it. And I got out, got me a sponsor. I asked this guy, Charlie. There was Charlie. Charlie at the meeting. I said, Charlie, will you be my sponsor? He said, hell no. I thought, that's all right. I'll report you. And I left that. We walked from the halfway house into the director of the halfway house. Said, Roger, wait till tomorrow night. Humble yourself and ask him again. I said, what do you mean by humble? He said, ask him directly and keep it short. Next night I saw him. Charlie's sitting by a woman. She's short and heavy just like him. They got matching haircuts. Got on matching shirts. They look like two little bookends. Oh, I would tell anybody, but I wanted what he had. I really did. I wanted to have a girlfriend. I want to have something like that. And it was his wife. And I went over and sat beside him. And Judy would look at Charlie and say, honey boo boo, will you go get me some coffee? Two sugars, two creamers. Love you. I thought, if he gets up, I'm going to hit him. He got up, went and got the coffee, brought it back to her. I thought, I'll be damned. And they were just so cute, man. And I asked him, after the meeting, some old guy's talking to him. The guy ain't paying no attention to Charlie. Charlie said, man, you know you've been powerless over over alcohol all your life. I'm standing behind that guy. I'm getting it. He said, you know you've been crazier than heck. I'm getting it, man. The guy he's talking to ain't even listening. So that guy walked away. And I said, Charlie, where are you? I said, where are you? What, Rod? What do you want, man? I said, well, you... Will you be my sponsor? He said, if you do three things. I said, what are they? He said, be honest, open, and willing. And I said, I would. And that's been 27 years ago. And I've been honest, open, and willing. I lived the best life. I'm telling you, man. I remember I was at the halfway house and everything got real. Everything was getting good. You know how you can see the clearer now, the colors are clear. And I called Charlie up. I said, Charlie, I got to talk to you, man. I'm freaking out. He said, come see me. He lived 28 blocks away. I walked down there to see him. Got to his house. Soon I walked in. Him and Judy are sitting on the couch. And they both leaned up and went, what's wrong? I said, I think I'm losing my mind. And they both jumped up and hugged me. They said, God, thank God you're losing that mind. And they was right. I'm so glad I got rid of that mind. Big book says we were reborn. New creatures. We're new creatures now. Something's changed in me. I used to look at people. This is how I know I've changed. I used to look at somebody way across the room. I'd say, oh, this side of my head would say, well, what a nice guy. This side would say, go slap the shit out of him. I don't do that no more. That's how I know I've changed. I know I've changed. You may not think I've changed, but I know it. I know that I know that I know. I'm a different man. And I started going to meetings, and there was a little redhead, only girl in the AA that would go, "Hi, Roger." I said, "Hi, Charlie would say, "Rod, we're going to take you to the University of Louisville and get some teeth." I went to the University of Louisville School of Dentistry. They took what was left that I had, and they started rebuilding my whole structure. Because I have no structure. That's why I'm in the halfway house. Halfway houses are for men who have no structure. And I'm at the School of Dentistry because my mouth has no structure. And they start to give me structure. And I'm telling you, if you do the steps, your teeth will grow back. You don't know how I felt, man. How would you like to go somewhere and people would walk by and snicker at you? And I thought I looked good because I didn't have no teeth. And Charlie said, "Rod, I'm going to help you." And he started doing like a sponsor does. He directed me to the University of Louisville School of Dentistry. I got my teeth back. Started doing good. And then I run into that girl again. That little redhead. She'd walk through the hall and she'd go, "Hey." And I'd go, I'd tell everybody. I said, "God, she wants me. Oh my God." So I started going to every meeting she went. You know how we are. Oh, you know how you girls are. Once y'all get us, now you can't shake us off. We're like Lent. Every meeting she went, I'm sitting right behind her. Her name is Beth. I go, "Hey, Beth, when we going out?" And she turned around real fast. She go, "When pigs fly." I thought, that girl wants me. I can feel it, man. And I'd ask her every time I'd sit behind her. I'd say, "When we going out?" I'd done it for 3 years. 3 years, Masoon. 3 years, Jim, I followed this girl. Y'all call it stalking. It wasn't stalking. I loved her, man. I felt the love. I wanted to share and see the love. I wanted to share it. And one night, 3 years later, we're sitting in this meeting, and I leaned up. I said, "Hey, Beth, when we going out?" She said, "Tonight." "Is that all right with you?" "Well." I do got to be back at the Talbot House at a certain time. Where do you want to go? She said, "I'll go anywhere where it's lit. Where there's lots of light." And there was a Burger King right up the road. I said, "Let's go to Burger King." She said, "I'll meet you there." She got in her car and left. I took off running. I ain't got a car. I run into Burger King. She's sitting in her car. I went up to the car. I said, "You want ice cream?" She goes, "Yeah, if it's going to be that good." The way I was breathing. So I went and got two cones to come back out. She got out of her car, stood beside the door. I handed her the ice cream. And she leaned up and kissed me right in the mouth. Right in the mouth, man. I couldn't move. Swear to God, things were moving, but I wasn't moving them. Everything's going on, but I didn't have no control over it. And I'm telling you, that ice cream's about to melt, man. Woo! And we started dating. And I dated her like you're supposed to. I didn't go in her house and make out with her and all that stuff like I wanted to. I respected her. I had respect. I still today, I respect my wife. I do, man. I'll come home and I'll say, "Can I have a kiss?" She goes, "Not tonight." "I respect you." "Oh, I really respect her." And it was New Year's Eve, 1996. She said, "Come over, I got you a present." I went to a jeweler and I bought an engagement ring. And I said, "I got to have the paperwork." The jeweler said, "Well, I'm going to give it to you because I want to make sure she knows I bought this at a store." You know what I mean? It was just my thing. I've been around crooks and thieves all my life. I know what to do. Go to her apartment that night, man. She meets me at the door. And she's all happy. I have never had a woman be happy to see me. Ever. No girl ever ran to her door, "Oh, Roger's here." But she did. She said, come in, I got a present for you." Go inside and she brings a big, fairly big box. And I open up the box, it's got khakis in it. You know what khakis are? And they say Dockers on the pocket. Yeah. I ain't never had them. I've had bibs. You know, working britches. And then I said, "Beth, sit down. I want to give you something." She said, "Okay." She ain't got a clue. And when she sat down, I got on my knees. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I want to give you your present." And I pulled this box out and handed the box to her. And I opened up the box and there was the ring. And she started crying. And I started crying. And a roommate come in and said, "What happened?" She said, "Roger asked me to marry him." And she started crying. What the hell? I feel like I'm a curse or something, you know. He's asking. And we got married on May the 30th, 1997. You know who came to our wedding? All AA people. All AA people, John. Wasn't them thieves I run with. Wasn't them wolves I chase. It was AA people. And my father-in-law, to-be, is a federal judge. We've got a lot to talk about. So when I'll never forget this. We're getting married in this big predominant yard. You know, it's real nice. And as soon as I said, "I do," and my father-in-law's in the wedding reception, you know, he's one of the guy groom. As soon as I said, "I do," he started moonwalking. He said, "She's yours now." Woo! And we went on a honeymoon at a little hotel there in Louisville. It's good to us. Had pools. Hot pool. Yeah, hot tub. And it was a heart-shaped pool. When we left, it was kidney shape. I swear, man. Or that's my perception. You know. And on December the 12th, 1997, we had a little girl. Don't add it up. It's 9 months. I know what y'all going to do. Y'all going to go home and go, "Wait a minute. June, July. Hey, it's 9 months." We had a little girl named Lily. Today, Lily is 21. And then we had another little girl, Katie. And Katie is 17. Katie's 17. And my oldest girl, Cheyenne, is 38. I got chicks everywhere, man. And my wife's been sober longer than I have, and she wanted to help a little girl who was pregnant. There was a little girl in our neighborhood who was pregnant, and she was going to have a little boy. But she kept taking cracks and marijuanas and all that stuff. And wouldn't stay sober. And my wife pleaded to her, please, don't do nothing while you're pregnant. She said it won't hurt the baby. Yeah. And she had a little boy. And she named him Christian. And when he was 10 weeks old, she came over to our house with the little boys and said, Roger, will you watch Christian? I got girls, man, nothing but chicks. Hell yeah, I'll watch him. I took that little boy and started playing, wee, 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 wee. And she didn't come back. That little girl didn't come back for 4 months. And in that 4 month period, I fell in love with this little boy. This little boy's mine, man. I learned him how to walk, how to hold on to the couch. You know how they do. And I'd get on my knees and go with him. He'd laugh. He loved it. And the girl came back. And she said, I'm here to get Christian. And my wife was holding Christian. She said, no, you're not getting him. I said, yes, she is. I said, we're going to do everything right. I've been brought up right by Charlie. Do the right thing. I took that child out of my wife's arms and gave it back to that little girl. And she left. And for the next 3 days, every time I'd come home from work, I'm a truck driver. A lot of people think I'm a doctor, but I'm not. I'm just a truck driver, man. And I'd come home every night, I'd go in the TV room, they'd get up and go in the other room. 3 nights went by. That little girl come back and said, Roger, will you watch Christian again? I wouldn't give him to me. Walked in the house. I got Christian back. Everything was great. My sponsor said, go file emergency adoption right now. I said, I'm going to wait a week. He said, well, wait a week. I waited a week. I waited 2 weeks. She didn't come back. I filed emergency adoption. When I filed emergency adoption, this prosecuting attorney, she knows my record. She knows me. And every time I go to, you have to go to court 7 times. Each time you go, you have to pay them over $1,000. I don't have that much money. And I'd give them everything I had, John. Because I love this child. And I want him to be with us. And after 7 months, the judge said, well, today that child is going to be yours. And that day, they set up the procedure, started having, here she come busting through the door, calling us MFs, SOBs. She said, the last child I gave away, they gave me money. And the judge said, get out. Get out of my courtroom. And the deputies took her outside. And he said, Roger Hightower, that child has your last name today. Christian Hightower. Man, I never felt joy like this. Never felt love in my heart. I love my girls. Something about this one. And I'd go pick him up at school. What do they call it? Car line? Christian would run out through the car and jump in. I'd say, how's your day? Hey, Dad, I had a good time today. I said, what happened? He said, they brought the fire engine. I said, did you get on? He said, yeah, get on. I rang the bell. I said, what was the most important part of your day? He said, being with you. You can have my drink. You can have my whatever it is. I'll take this. I'll take this life I'm living. And I wanted to come to Cartersville and tell you all that. I love exactly the way I'm living. I got a wife who kind of loves me. Depending on what day it is.